Okay, Parshas Naso is upon us. The beginning of the Parsha begins with the counting of B'nai Gershon and B'nai Merari, and to a certain degree, B'nai Kahas. And the Torah tells us, Vayu Pekudehem L'mishpachosam Alpayim Shvar Me'osach Amishem, that in regard to the children of Kahas, we find that their numbers were 2,750. Now recall something very valuable. Kahas had four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And the four sons had the offspring who in total numbered 2,750. When you take into account the fact that one, Amram, had six children, that is to say he had Moshe and Aaron as two, Aaron at the time of this counting only had Elazar and Isamar, and Moshe had Gershom and Eliezer, so that makes a grand total of six, which means that 2,744 came from the children of Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. The question has to be raised, how could there be such a discrepancy in the numbers within the same family? How could we go from six to 2,744 divided by 3. So Zalman Saratskin, the author of the Lutzker Rav, and the author of the Aznaim LaTorah, points out that this is based on the words of Chazal, Ra'isi b'nei aliyah v'hei mu'atim. That is to say, there are times I've seen great people rise, but they rise in small numbers. The fact is that there's plenty of simple grass, and there's weed that grows on its own. But roses need to be cultivated. And it takes a lot of effort to cultivate roses, and therefore sometimes those numbers are minimized. And so in order to have a family with a Moshe, an Aaron, and a Miriam, and to have the time to put into a Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, and cultivating a Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam, that meant that Amram and Yocheber were going to unfortunately have a smaller family with fewer descendants. Rav Soloveitchik made a similar comment, which we noted last week, in last week's Sedra, when he noted the tragedy of Moshe Rabbeinu to a certain degree, was the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu was given over to the people. When he was given over to the people, he was not able to have the same size within his family. In the third Aliyah, we get into a discussion of a section of the Torah known as Gezel HaGer, where one who steals from a ger and therefore wants to return it at that point, how he should proceed. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal asked the question, why is this section in the Parsha? What is to be gained by highlighting this section in the Parsha? And Rav Lichtenstein answered that the underlying idea of the, at least the beginning of the book of Bamidbar, is the understanding L'mishpachosam L'beis Avosam. At least in Bamidbar and Nasa, we keep hearing that phrase over and over and over again, according to the families and by the house of the fathers. The beginning of the book of Bamidbar really therefore focuses upon family and tribal roots. However, notes Rav Lichtenstein, there's a psychological danger that stems from the feelings of tribal rootedness and connection. It leads one to disregard, and perhaps even act hostily, towards all outsiders, towards those who don't belong, l'mishpachosam u'levei savosam, to the family. However, while Judaism sees the family and the nation as central to Jewish identity and consciousness, it's also aware of the dangers to which these loyalties can lead when taken to an extreme. And so for that reason, we're told, in regard to Gezel HaGer, we're told specifically the ger, the foreigner, the one who lacks family, needs to be taken into account and is most vulnerable to the atmosphere that pervades the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. So the Torah tells us, be careful, deal with the ger in the exact same way that you would deal with our fellow Jewish people. Then we get into the parashios of Sota and Nazir. And there's a major juxtaposition between the Sota and the Nazir, to which the Gemara in Sota, which gets cited famously by Rashi, notes that Kol haroa Sota b'kilkula, when a person sees the Sota in her degradation, Yazir atzmo min hayayin, he'll keep himself away from wine. So Marner of Shechter Shalita has seized on this idea on more than one occasion, and he pointed out to us that it's not only true in regard to the Sota, but rather this is true whenever one needs to approach a corrupt moral or a corrupt society. In those instances, Shvila Zahav, the middle of the road approach, is not ideal. In fact, one needs to go to the other extreme. One needs to go ma'od ma'od have a shval ruach, because there tends to be a sense of gaiva that exists and pervades the world. Rav Shachter added that this is not only true for averos that exist bein adam la'makom, but rather is true even in averos that are bein adam l'chavero as well. In regard to the Nazir, we're told, kol yemein nizro mikol asher yaaseh migefen hayayin, that the Nazir has to stay away from anything produced by the grapevine. And the Torah also forbids a Nazir from becoming tamei. Now, if the whole issue of sota and its subsequent issue of Nazir is caused by the individual realizing that he has gone to excess, and kol aroa sota bekokula yazir atzmo min hayayin, so then quite honestly, why do we go further and tell a Nazir not to become tamei and not to consume any great pri product? So the late great author of the Nachlas David, Rav David Tevel, Zatzal, explains that this idea is consistent with the idea that the fruit of the Eitz Hadas was a grape. And when that grape was eaten, it brought about the Eitz Hara and death into the world. And so therefore, the Torah is actually forbidding a Nazir from becoming Tamei and from partaking from the grape byproducts. This is such in order to get man not to be enticed by the Eitz Hadas, and get him instead focused on clinging to the Eitz HaChayim. By separating from all the things that came about with death, that came about through the Cheda Eitz HaDas, Rav David Tevel explains, a Nazir is able to live an ideal life. At the end of that section, we're told of the responsibility that the Kohanim have to give a bracha to Bnei Yisrael. And we're told that one of the aspects of the brachos is v'ichu neka, that Hashem should display chen to you. And Ramban explains that the Jewish people should find, should be able to find chen in the eyes of Hashem. And the question has to be raised, why is chen so important? After all, isn't the idea of chen being dependent on another person? So the late, great Rav Simcha Zissel Brady explains that chen is an indication of shleimus that comes to a person who is and does nice things. Diligent Torah study and practice, coupled with traits like humility, help make up this critical trait. The blessing of vichuneka, that Hashem should show you chen, is a blessing that through the perfection of these traits we should be able to be found without any blemish in our intentions as well as in our actions. The majority of the end of the Sedra, we're also told, well, before we get to the majority at the end of the Sedra, let's first go back to the Nazir for a moment. Because at the end of his Nazirus, he should be brought, Yavio, so he should be brought to Ohel Moed. And the question has to be asked, why is he brought to the Mikdash to complete the Nazirus? So there's a wonderful Rav in Cleveland, Ohio, a nice young Talmud Chacham, Rabbi David Gross, who once pointed out to me that the Nazir undertakes his Naziris in order to help him suppress his Yetzer Hara, as we've already identified. But that process is able to be seen as complete when the Nazir is able to present with the objectivity of an outsider. And so therefore, Yavioso is an understanding that through the process of Naziris, however long it takes, he will develop that understanding of developing the objectivity of the outsider. To overcome desire, one needs to look at himself with the vantage point of an objective outsider. The end of the bulk of the parasha deals with the Karbanos HaNasiim, and the Ramban quotes a medrash that notes that each Nasi brought the carbon that matched his own unique intentions. It was a coincidence that the results were the exact same carbon. And so the question needs to be asked as to why the same carbon should be offered with a variety of different kavanos. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal explained that when a person brings a carbon, he needs to have in mind that it's his carbon that is replacing him. And each Nasi had his own intentions. That mission that was unique to each Nasi and Shevet, which represented specific midos and strains, it happened to work out, that each Nasi wound up with the same koach. I conjecture, perhaps, that it doesn't happen to work out. That is the intention of the Ribono Shel Olam. There is a Rashi in Parshas Vayera that points out, Hu Aharon u Moshe, Hu Moshe vi Aharon, that Aharon and Moshe are shkulim, which is of course an impossibility since, at least in regard to Nevuah, we believe as a basic tenet of our faith that Lo Kam Navi Oud Bi Yisrael Kemoshe, that nobody was as great as Moshe in terms of his power of prophecy. So how then could Aharon be equivalent? And the answer, of course, is that in regard to Aharon and Moshe, they are equivalent. What the Navi wants us to understand, what the Torah wants us to understand, is that while they are equivalent, the Moshe and Aharon represented different strengths. And in that manner, Aharon's Avodas Hashem and his obligations were different than our Avodas Hashem and Moshe's Avodas Hashem. I believe the same thing is true for the Nasiim. They used different calculations. They came to the same carbon to Hashem, highlighting the fact that in that regard, their pieces, their offering, were all shkulim in front of Hashem. They were all equal in front of Hashem. Finally, in the course of the Haftorah, we read about the birth of Shimshon and the prelude that leads up to it. And in the regard to the Haftorah, we find the Malach asking Manoach why it is that he wants to know his name, Lama Zeh Tishalishmi, but then he answers him, Bahu Peli. And the question has to be raised, why the difficulty? And if the Malach was going to answer him anyhow, why begin with the question, Lama Zeh Tishalishmi? So Rabbi Yamin Eisenberger Shlita explains, based on the Arizal's understanding, that the world is really just a mashal for our relationship with Hashem. Malachim, as we know, do not live in the world of mashal, and as a result, have a difficulty putting a name on something. However, even to Manoach, it's covered. But also, as the Malbim explains, it's a Pella. It's a wondrous thing, representative of a different relationship with something greater, if you allow yourself to be open to that deeper level of interpretation. We added that this is the ultimate post-Shavuos Haftorah, in that Shavuos is the holiday of above-surface-level relationship with Hashem. Even eating on Shavuos is transformative and is indicative of something higher. Maybe that's the interpretation of the Gemara's explanation, HaKol Modim DeBatzeres Ba'ina Nami Lachem, that everybody agrees that on Atzeres, on Shavuos, we also need to use Lachem. The trick, as the Arizal points out, is the higher level of living. If you live as a Pella, as an understanding that life is just covered over, then you will never answer the question, Lama Zeh Tishalishmi. A person has to be umafli la'asos, he has to be open to the understanding of a deeper level of interpretation of existence. And from that, we all continue to grow. Wishing you a strong Shabbat Shalom to all.